Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Suggest you shut up and show more football.
Come on, come on. Take it. We've done that thing. Can we not knock it?
I am flabbergasted. I wouldn't even let them on the bus after the match. I get a taxi back to Manchester.
Again, please don't call me arrogant because what I'm saying is true. I think I'm a special one.
When the seagulls follow the troll, it's because they sink sardines. Will be strong into the sea. Thank you.
I understand what I'm trying to get at. Yes, he was a great player. Yes, he was a wonderful leader. But he wasn't a magician.
Take him, Bowson. I mean that. Take him.
I'm Richard Keys.
And I'm a very injured Andrew Gray.
Yes, we will explain more in just a moment. There is, for the first time, no, not the first time, the second time. Last week was the first, of course.
Oh.
There's the best part of 3,500 miles between us. If you didn't listen to last week's podcast, we will explain more. Anyway, another busy week of football behind us. This is our respite in many ways, Andy, this podcast. I like to think of it as a glorious oasis for us because we can do what we want. We generally do. It can be a little bit organic. That's a very modern word, I think. But it's also a place where we can talk about, well, it grows from beneath. It has its own pace.
Okay. Right.
And we can debate anything we like, anything that we feel is important. We can talk to anybody we want to. And we've had some top guests across the early episodes. Do, if you're listening for the first time, do go back and take a listen to the likes of Joey Barton, Alan Pardew from Sofia, now in charge at Cisca as director of football. Paul Robinson, the former England goalkeeper. Robert Huth, title winner with Chelsea and Leicester. The legendary Liam Brady, Derek Johnston, Nigel de Jong, Peter Reid, Dwight York. And there are loads more like it. Lots of great chat and discussion. And obviously a little bit of a chuckle up, as the late great Ray Wilkins would have said. And naturally... talking to Ray, there's a little bit of sadness in there as well. In short, some great stories from our guests. If you want to get in touch, do please at Keys and Gray podcast. I always get pod at Keys and Gray pod, and you have to spell it out, A-N-D, at Keys and Gray pod, and we're available on both Twitter and Instagram. Our guest today will be joining us shortly from Miami. So we really are, once again... Ooh. Spreading our wings around the world. It was India last week. It's Miami this. And I should add, Andy, that this is a completely independent podcast. It's not owned or part of any organization. It doesn't get support from a media owner. The only support it gets is from the listeners. So thank you for that. Thank you for subscribing and sharing and spreading the word that makes this pod stronger week by week. And a very, very warm welcome to our new listeners. What am I describing, Andy? I consist of four provinces.
Okay.
I was once territory of the Roman Empire. That could apply to a lot of places, I suppose.
A lot of places,
Contentiously, we voted for independence recently. This is not Scotland. That's going to happen in May.
Oh, right. No.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
You can visit the Pyrenees from here. I have a Gothic quarter.
I know where we are. Well, I know what country we're in, yeah.
And La Ramblas is the main walkthrough.
Ah. Giveaway, Barcelona.
Correct. I have no idea why, but to all of you from Barcelona and Catalonia in general that have joined us, you are very welcome. Message to everybody, please spread the word. Tell your mates that you found us now that
right.
you have.
Right. Now, on the back of that, yeah. I have a quick word for you, Mr. Keith.
Yes.
Now that we've got some wonderful VIP listeners in Catalonia, you need to stop giving Pep Guardiola stick. All right? That's it. As far as you're concerned now, for our Catalonian listeners, he's the top man.
I will absorb what you've said to me should he win the Champions League this year for the first time without Lionel Messi. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah,
that's
yeah.
the one
I'll
thing
give
he's
you that.
Failed to do since he left Barcelona. He has a chance. But after this week's performances, I think so too to Paris. Anyway, listen, on a serious note, Andy's back in the UK awaiting knee surgery. I, for the last 48 hours, Andy, thought long and hard about this. You come from a generation where you were often just patched up and put out. Mm-hmm. That in order to mm-hmm. play, you had to have an injection, often. That
yeah.
wouldn't, that couldn't happen in the modern game. As you sit there now, waiting for a knee replacement, having had a hip replacement, do you look back with anger, annoyance, regret that you kept turning out week after week after week at great cost to your health?
None of the above, Richard, if I'm honest. You know me, and as well as most. And I have to say that at the age I'm at now, and the career I was able to have, I played, I made my debut at 17 as a professional. I made my last performance when I was 33, nearly 34, at the top level in Glasgow, with Rangers. And, you know, represented my country, won things. Now, if I'm, the price I have to pay for that is as a new knee and a new hip, that for me was a price worth paying. Admittedly, as you're quite right to say, back in the day, players should have had more protection. I injected myself, not myself, but was injected at various times with so many cortisone injections to get me onto a football pitch half an hour before kickoff, with not a care or worry about what was going to happen in the future. So in that case, the players are so much better off now. They have so much power themselves, Richard. In those days, you had to do what you were told. It was as simple as that. And I did take injections, particularly when I was young, because I wanted to play. And I didn't want to disappoint the coach I was with, and I didn't want to disappoint my teammates or the fans I was playing for. So I've had many injections, you know, to various parts of my body to get me on a football pitch. But I have no regrets about that now as I sit here waiting on a replacement knee to come in. No. None at all.
How many times would you guesstimate that you were injected before you went out to play?
Wow.
And where, Andy? Where?
Well, let me start. Top of my body, I would say shoulder. And the shoulder there, into my stomach, straight into my stomach. Injected there, injected into my thigh, injected into my knee, ankles on numerous occasions with cortisone. So pretty much up and down into my glutes as well. There's a couple of problems there. So pretty much all over my body that I was injected at various times to get me on a football pitch.
So you would get through 90 minutes. What was the price to pay for that? What was the reaction?
Nah. Well, have you got time for one quick story?
Andy, it's our podcast. We've got as much time as
we want. I know. I'm conscious of our guest.
He'll be fine.
Right. Well, here's a quick one for you. I'm playing for Aston Villa, right? And I've had a great couple of seasons. I'm playing at the skin. I'm arguably the best player. And we play, of all teams, Port Vale. Now, you'd think Port Vale wouldn't put up much of a fight in a cup tie, an FA Cup tie, Richard. You'd think that Villa could beat them without me back then, because there's so many good players. But we'd had a couple of FA results coming into this cup tie, and I'd had a bad ankle. And I was about a week away. And I went down to the game, and Saunders came to me and said, listen, do you mind, why don't you have a little go out there? So the physio was strapped up.
Hold on, sorry to interrupt. Saunders being Ron Saunders, Villa manager at the
sorry.
Time.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, Ron Saunders, sorry. Yeah. And he said, would you have a try? I'd really like you to play. I said, okay. So I went out and tried. It was hopeless. I hobbled about. Came back in. I said, I'm struggling, boss. It's not good. He says, listen, I really need you to play. I said, why? He says, well, if they pick up the team seat next door and they see you're not on it, it's going to give them such a lift. And, you know, if they pick it up and they see your name's on it, it's not, they're going to be petrified and it'll help us. I said, well, I don't know what I can do. And the physio said, well, I could strap your ankle up so it doesn't move. He says, and I'll probably get you through it. I says, well, I'm willing to try it. I'm not happy, but I'll try it. And the bunch of us went, well, can we have a go then? So he strapped up my ankle to that, like a horseshoe. They call it, a horseshoe strapping. When your ankle doesn't move at all, it's just rigid. So I went out, put my boots on. Felt terrible, but I went and played. Played 45 minutes, and I think we were winning 3-0. I hadn't affected the game at all. I was just there. Came in off at half time because I couldn't go any further, and I was out for 6 weeks after that. Wow. When I would have been back in a week. So that's the kind of thing that can happen by having injections and wrapping up and playing when you shouldn't. But that was just one example of what we did back then.
I want you to tell me another one in a minute.
A lot of players like
I know the story. I want you to share it though. But the knee you're waiting to have replaced now, 6 different operations on that knee.
Yeah. From started at Dundee United, one of my mates caught me in a practice match, and that was my first cartilage operation. And then from there, it was, and I think mainly because I'm left-footed, Richard, and you know, when you're controlling the ball and you're using your strong side, you're keeping that ball away from defenders. It's your right side that gets the punishment that has to brace all the challenges 9 times out of 10 in that situation. So the right side took a bit of stick. And various operations throughout the next 17 years. On that knee.
Twice failed medicals when you made big moves. 1 to Wolves when you were the most expensive player in the country. 1 to Everton when, towards the back end of your career, it wasn't quite as significant. But that knee obviously plagued you from the time that you were a teenager.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't just plague me. I mean, I was aware of it, and it didn't affect me until much later in my career. But I had to, as I got in my mid-20s to late-20s, I had to tailor things I did on a football pitch. I wasn't as reckless for a start, because I couldn't be, because, you know, my knee was had been operated so many times. There was a weakness in there. Mm. And so I had to take care a little bit, so I wasn't as... I didn't have as much bravado in my game as I got older, and tended to use the head more. But yes, I was aware of it, and I had to take anti-inflammatories pretty much daily for my whole career almost, to keep the swelling down. And I was often sitting with ice on my knee at various times after training sessions just to keep the knee under control. Yeah, I had to do all these sort of things. So I had to sort of tailor my training and what I did, my recovery, very much with my knee in mind.
See, I'm guessing that example you told us about trying to get ready to play against Paul Vale wasn't isolated.
Mm.
And as you talk, my mind is cast back to the reason you fell out with Ron Saunders, which is because he felt you were cheating your teammates, not available to play in a big European Cup game against Barcelona. Now, that's rough idea for those that are listening. What happened? You put the meat on it.
Yeah, it wasn't so much that I was injured to play. This was Ron Saunders and his magical way of managing players. Again, we were drawn to play against Barcelona and the whatever we called Europa League or UEFA Cup, Fairs Cup, whatever it was in those days. And we'd drawn 2-2 in the first leg, and I had missed it because I had a slight injury. But we had a half a chance. So on the Sunday prior to going to Barcelona, I was in getting treatment, and full of optimism that I was going to be ready for Wednesday night. Never played at the new camp. It was going to be something special. And, you know, again, arguably as the best player, you would have thought he would have gone, pushed barriers back, having asked me to do what he had the years prior to that, to get me fit and get me on the pitch. So he came in on the Sunday morning, and he never used to come in on a Sunday because Ron was one of these coaches, and there's a lot of them, who, if you're injured, he's not really got time for you. He's only interested in the players who are fit and could do a job for him. So he came in this day on Sunday, find out how I was. I said, yeah, I'm not bad, boss, I'm good. He says, how's it feel? And I said, well, I should be okay for Wednesday. I've no doubt about that. A few more days treatment and I should be ready to go. He says, no, it's not what I'm asking you. I said, what do you mean? It's not what? He says, I'm asking you, you're fit now. I went, what? Are you fit today? I said, well, no, of course I'm not. He says, well, I'm not taking it. I says, what? I'm not taking it. And the physio's looking there, stood there, open mouth. Can't believe what he's hearing the coach say about one of his best players about to go in, who said he's going to be fit, who's going to go into this game, and he's not going to take me. Not only did he not play me, he never took me. I never even travelled with the boys. And he walked away. He says, no, if you can't tell me you would be able to play today, then you're not playing and I'm not taking you.
Incredible.
Oh, thanks very much. And the reason we fell out, because he'd held court, seemingly, on the way back in the plane. And one of my mates, who's the journal, and asked, where was Andy? Because they only got beat 2-1 Villa that night. And who knows what difference that might have made. And obviously, they were questioning him on that. And he said, well, don't ask me, ask Andy. He's let everybody down. So when I heard that, I said, okay, Ron, see that? See me? See my face? Well, that's the last you're going to see it. Transfer, please. I've lost all respect. Can't play for you again, sir. I'm sorry. I want to go. And that was the end. That was the beginning of the end at Villa, because of that. After having played so many times, so many injections, and he wouldn't give me 3 days, and I'd have been fit to play at Barcelona. Amazing.
Extraordinary. It really is extraordinary. Amazing. Yeah. The rest, as they say, is history. Okay, one or two bits and pieces before we join our guest today. Look out for a documentary on Pelé next week on Netflix. Described here as naturally footballing legend who scored 12 goals in 14 World Cup matches and had so many affairs that he lost count. this
Pelé,
yes,
Pelé.
This is the pre-match pre-documentary publicity. Pelé has seven known offspring. This is five of his children came from his first two marriages. In a new documentary out next week, Pelé claims that he always told his wives and girlfriends that he was unfaithful. That's just the bit I like. But although that may be true, the playing field apparently was a one-way street for Pelé. De Gracia Juja, a 57-year-old former model who started seeing Pelé when she was just 17, revealed last month. He said it was an open relationship, but open only to him.
Pelé, that's brilliant, isn't he? What a boy.
So look out for more on Pelé next week on Netflix. There's something about, have you seen the picture?
I can't wait to see that.
Referee Drysdale confronting.
Yes.
Now, there's something about that, Andy, that I quite liked. He's got himself into trouble. He'll almost certainly, I suppose, serve a suspension. But the days when you could converse with the referee on the football pitch, not quite as aggressively as that, I have gone forever. And, you know, it's a shame. And of course, he's there to keep calm and not exacerbate situations on football pitches. But I quite like the way he stood up and said, oh, yeah.
I know.
And I know I shouldn't.
Well, I did. And I think, no, I know I shouldn't either. But I think the thing that makes it, that what makes it bad to people is because of that one split second, the picture, and that particular picture probably got him as he's closest to the player.
Judge,
and he's
most
aggressive. Second to the player. If you took maybe a picture 2 seconds, 3 seconds later, it would be less confrontational.
Mm.
And I think it just looked really, because he's so tall and the player he's come against was so small, it looked like he's really in his face. But listen, I think referees have taken so much stick. It wouldn't surprise me. I got plenty of stick from refs. They used to give you plenty of verbal back because they weren't mic'd up and they gave as good as they got back in the day. Trust me, Hector, there's no doubt. You can't do it these days, but he will get a suspension, probably. Probably. But I suppose in this PC world we live in, we have to condemn it. But I quite liked it myself.
Back this week, Lee Mason, who will take the board, I believe, at Manchester United. He's not being entrusted either with a game or with a seat in the bunker.
But
Mike Dean, who also missed last weekend, asked to stand down as a result of death threats, of course, although he had refereed an FA Cup match on the Wednesday. And he's back one
That's
match.
Great.
He's back one match after or back one round. A little bit like Lee Mason, which kind of got me to conclude that maybe he'd have been stood down if he hadn't been the victim of the death threats and decided to pull out anyway. But you know the game they've given him? They've given him one that they believe doesn't matter. They've given him one that they believe he can take charge of and get through without causing controversy. I would suggest that knowing that's impossible. But the game he's been given is Burnley West Brom. Now, I think that is every bit as important to Burnley and West Brom as a game between the Merseyside derby, let's say. Let's say the Merseyside derby. But because they want to ease him back in and keep him out of the spotlight, they've given him Burnley. See, I think that's wrong. I really do. I think when they do that, they're sending a message. We don't care so much about Burnley and West Brom as we do the Merseyside derby. He's got to find his way back. Give him a game in the middle of the table.
Well, that's what I thought. When you said to me, guess what game he's going to get, I was trying to think, who are the mid-table team who really are not getting relegated and who are not going to affect Europe? And I was thinking, well, that's the game you're talking about. But come on, Burnley West Brom. This might be West Brom, one of the final chances of actually pegging a team that's just above them and pegging them back 3 points. And that's a huge thing for Big Sam's team. And John Dyche is sitting there thinking, well, if we can beat Burnley, that's it. If we can beat West Brom, that's them gone. Mm. They can't catch us. That's how important that game is. It's their players' future. And if you want to know about futures, just think about it. I'm thinking about one of my old teams. Look at the way Villa escaped last year by the skin of their teeth, Richard. Got out of there and survived. Look at it now, 12 months down the line. Mm. Look where they are. Look how they're playing. That's what staying in the league can do to you. And you know, to suggest otherwise that Burnley and West Brom doesn't matter because it's Burnley and West Brom, that's not right.
Well, keep your eyes on it. We're recording Thursday night. By the time you're listening to this, the game may well have been played, but I'm making an early prediction that there will be trouble in one form or another. And by the way, Villa survived, thanks only to VAR. Let's never forget that. Okay. In reverse order, the top five favourites for the sack at the moment, and there's a purpose in this. At five, at 12 to one with Paddy Power, Sam Allardyce. At four, Steve Bruce at 8 to 1. At three, Jurgen Klopp at 11 to 2. At two, Roy Hodgson at 11 to 2. And our current favourite for the sack, at 7 to 4, Jose Mourinho. Thoughts?
Klopp, I'm amazed at. Jurgen Klopp leaves Liverpool if he wants, in my opinion. His choice, no one else's at the moment. Why would anyone think he's third favourite for the sack is beyond me, particularly after the magnificent win they had against Leipzig.
I just think there's a strange smell about Anfield, Andy. There's something that's not quite right. But I can't put my finger on it.
Yeah, I get that. But Richard, they're not going to sack Klopp. Come on. You honestly think that the owners are going to sack Jurgen Klopp?
No. I think that if they were to part company, it would be Klopp's decision. I agree.
Now, Jose Mourinho is a really interesting one. What did you say? 74 favourite?
72. 72 favourite, yeah.
Wow. How do you feel about that? Do you think so?
I think it's probably something that we should put to our guest who knows more about Tottenham Hotspur than most. Part of the famous five being Ilie Dumitrescu, Jurgen Klinsmann,
good knowledge.
Teddy Sheringham, Nicky Barmby, and our guest, Darren Anderton, who once turned down the chance to play for Manchester United, but committed a far greater football sin than that, and we will discuss during the course of our conversation.
He did, and I'm going to pull him up for it in a minute. I'm telling you now.
I wondered if you'd know. Let's say a very good morning in Miami to Darren Anderton. Darren, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you all doing? We're good, Darren. We're very, very good.
I'm good, Darren. He's maybe not as good as I am, but... Where are you, Darren, and why are you where you are?
I'm in California, so we are just outside of a place called Monterey. Is about 15 minutes away from Pebble Beach, which is very nice at the moment. My wife is from this area, so I'm quite happy to be out here, especially at the moment. It's been a tough year for everyone.
Yeah, funny enough, Darren, Richard, I know that area quite well. When we were in California working on one of the big tournaments, we actually flew from Los Angeles and stayed the night in Monterey and played Pebble Beach. Phenomenal.
Yeah. Incredible, isn't it?
Beautiful.
The whole area, I mean, it's got more than just Pebble Beach. I mean, you know, the ATP and Pro-Am normally plays at Spyglass and MPCC and all those courses. I mean, Cyprus, I mean, you certainly don't get bored of golf here, believe me.
No.
We're all going to have to live with the delay, guys. I know you don't get bored. So let me, first of all, Andy, correct misinformation that I've already said. Darren is not in Miami. He's in California. He's Monterey. I'll tell you a story about that, Darren. We played Pebble, Andy and myself, made the mistake of not playing it the following morning. We came home, but we thought we'll go into Monterey tonight. We'll dine out. So we went to the reception desk at the golf club and said, can you book us a table? yeah, no problem at all. What sort of time? And I said, well, 8 o'clock. And
she went,
8 o'clock.
Oh, good luck.
I thought, well, it's obviously a busy time, you know. I didn't realise that every restaurant in Monterey was shut at 7:30. I mean, the place just closes down, doesn't it?
It's ridiculous. I mean, that's probably why, you know, you're lucky that I'm up so early now. You know, that people get up early and go to bed early here. Make the most of the day, I suppose. But yeah, believe me, I felt the same way when I first came. I'm kind of used to it now, going out for dinner at 6 o'clock, straight off the golf course.
Eight o'clock, and we were the last two people in the restaurant. It was daft.
Absolutely, it's crazy, isn't it? But yeah, I guess used to close the restaurants and bars down in London. Now it's a bit easier to do here.
Right. Now, a number of things that I'd like to discuss. One, what was it like being part of the Famous Five?
It was great. It was great fun. Exciting times. I think it almost was the start of where the Premier League really turned the screw in terms of the quality, with obviously Jürgen being the main signing and the reason because of that. And of course, everyone followed suit. It was so much fun to play for Ozzy. You both know him very well, I'm sure, what a good guy he is. Mm-hmm. The way he wants your team to play. You know, you have meetings when things aren't going well. You know, well, what about our shape when we lose the ball? And he's like, no. Let's look at this room. This room shouldn't give the ball away. And that was his response. And if he just go get it back. It was such a shame that it didn't work out and that teams worked out how to play against us, which was obviously if you defend well, you know, you'll get chances and hit them on the counter-attack. But, you know, some big games that I always remember that, you know, the first game, Jürgen's first game at Sheffield Wednesday. What a day and what a, you know.
Yeah.
It was everything that everyone wants to watch, wasn't it? And for, you know, TV to watch and entertain. And that's what that team did. Unfortunately, very tough to win trophies and that sort of thing, I suppose. But Gerry Francis came in after that and made us defend properly. And with those players, we were always going to create chances, weren't we? So it was, the thing is, it wasn't the famous five. There was literally, you know, when we go forward, it was, you know, both fullbacks bomb on, you know, one fitting central midfielder and two centre backs. So
two centre backs.
Yeah, it was crazy, really. But for the five, it was pretty good fun.
Do you see anything of Jürgen now? Because you're not too far apart over there, are you?
Yeah, no, he's down probably 5 or 6 hours down in Santa Barbara. So spoke to him. I think I'd love to see him get back involved. And obviously, I don't, you know, want to preempt things or anything. But I think that one day that maybe he could end up back at Spurs, which I think everyone would be happy about.
What are you saying?
I know.
Do you know what, Andy? I sensed that we were going. I sensed we were going in a different direction. There. I spoke to him the other day about, maybe one day he'll go back to town.
Exactly.
I have to say, Darren, he is really. I think he's brilliant. I don't think the Germans get Jürgen. He's Marmite, isn't he? In some respects, we love him. They really don't like him at all. But I'm like you. I would love to see him back involved. So when do you think it will be?
Who knows?
I mean,
I mean, yeah, exactly. I tell you what, it's been a bit of a struggle getting up early to watch the Premier League games here, and you know the Spurs games. They've been a little bit tough to watch, I think, and it's a lot of frustration amongst, you know, former players and, you know, fans. But, you know, I think we all knew what it was going to be like, and I don't think this is a surprise, the way that he sets his teams out to play, and hopefully we can win something. That's what everyone kept throwing at Poch, and the football was, you know, fantastic. The young players that came through turned into really top players. But we want to win something, and you know we're in a final. The way that Man City are going, it's obviously going to be a hell of a shock for anyone to beat them at the moment. But if you want a manager to go and play City and shut up shop and make it difficult, then Jose's the man.
Yeah,
who knows,
Darren? Do you? I mean, before you joined us, Andy and I were discussing right now a favourite with Paddy Power to be the next man sacked, Jose Mourinho, 7-4. Andy.
Yeah,
you were right. What do Tottenham fans want? Do they want a trophy more than they want to enjoy watching the sort of football that Pochettino delivered that got you close, but obviously not close enough?
I think that's a difficult one. I think they want both, which is very tough. But then you have to decide, you know, you're not going to get both with Jose, and under Poch, we didn't get both either. So you have to be careful what you wish for. I think that when Spurs beat Arsenal and Manchester City earlier in the year and got the draw at Chelsea, fans were pretty happy. Mm. But they weren't playing any different to how they are now. You know, it's the way they play. When you've got Harry, you've got Sonny, you've got players who can win games with just moments of magic. It's not particularly outstanding football or anything like that. But they were great results against Man City. I remember they were top of the league, and everyone's going, "Oh my God, this is all amazing." The reality was, it wasn't amazing football, was it? It was they did a job, and they did a really good job. But now, when they go and play against, you know, your other teams, where you know, Tottenham fans expect, when you play at home to teams in probably the bottom half, to play a certain brand of football, to create opportunities, to score goals, and have very good players to watch, which they still have. But you've got to get the ball to those sort of players in the right areas of the pitch and let them go and express themselves. That's not happening at the moment. That's frustrating.
Yeah, Darren, let me ask you about the players. I mean, how long do you think? I mean, most of these guys that are there, most of them, vast majority of them, were there in the pot playing a brand of football, as you said, that was really pleasing on the eye, that was good to watch, it was progressive, it was adventurous. Never quite got them over the line. And now they've had a year of Jose. Do you sense in any way one or two of them unsettled about the way that Tottenham are going and the way that they're being asked to play?
Possibly. I think with someone like Harry Kane, he's such a good professional and a good lad. Mm. I think, you know, when I spoke to him before, just, you know, once Jose got there, and, you know, considering that Pochettino's done And he was loving Jose. I mean, really, to then he was, he's different class. He's a great guy. You know, his ideas are great. It all comes down to winning football matches and that sort of thing, doesn't it? And then you buy into what your manager says. If you start losing, then you're going to want to, you're going to want better. And I think there's no doubt about it. There has to be a time, you know, obviously there's a final coming up that they'll all be looking forward to. But as a forward thinking player, you know, you want to express yourself. You want to do good things and win football matches in a good way. When George came, when I was playing, you know, there was lots of talk about, oh, George, you know, how they're going to play. I mean, he came and replaced Christian Groth a little bit easier, I think.
I could have done that.
To be fair, right? And but George was clever, right? I mean, when we played at home, we were still entertaining. We all thought, you know, David would be straight out the door. But George was clever, used him well. Away games, you know, we were much more defensive, and that, for me being an attacking player, was a little bit frustrating at times. But at home, it was, you know, it was great. It was still, you know, we had the players that would go and score goals. So I think if I was there now, I was a Harry Kane, I would be getting pretty frustrated, I would say.
Right.
You know, we keep talking about, you know, Harry setting up goals and then how good he is defensively, and with, you know, he's top man. He's going to score goals in any team, I think. But he could play in any team, but almost in the world, in my opinion. And at what point, you know, is he going to become frustrated?
Well, you're actually asking yourself the question I was about to, Darren, because you probably won't have seen it yet. But the UK press today speculating back page that 150 million would tempt Daniel Levy to sell Harry Kane, who's what, 27, 28?
Wow.
Would that in any way, knowing what you do about Levy and the way that he's himself managed that football club, would that surprise you?
Yeah.
And do you believe that Kane himself at some point has to leave in order to win medals?
At the moment, it looks that way, although we're in a final. So that's the point. But I think Harry Kane has been part of the Tottenham team that has been challenging for, you know, most of the time that he's been around, and that the club has always been on the up. And I think it's getting into a Champions League final, you know, a couple of years ago, to where the club is now is it's obviously not continuing that upward curve. So I think Harry's ambitious. I think, you know, yes, he's captain of England, that sort of thing, and what an honour that is for him. So he's able to still do all that being at Tottenham. But as a player, you want to win things, and he has to believe that the club can challenge. At the moment, I'd be very surprised if he would be thinking that. In terms of Daniel, I mean, if that sort of money's thrown at him, then of course I would think it's something he would think about.
Yeah.
The problem being, obviously, the reaction that he would get from everyone within football, from Spurs, would be a negative one. And would then look at Tottenham as not being a top club because they're selling their best
But
players.
In some ways, it's not dissimilar to the situation that you found yourself in. How close were you to joining Manchester United?
Yeah, very close. I mean, I had a clause in my contract which meant that I could talk to teams if they offered, you know, a certain amount, and United were going to do that. I remember playing in what was the Umbro Cup before Euro 96 back in 95, and after the game, Gary Pallister was in the squad and, you know, come and spoke to me and said, you know, we had the same agent, and he was just like, you know, the gaffer would love to speak to you. And I was like, oh, okay. Said, I think he's desperate to get you. So he called me and he basically said, you know, what's the clause? And I'm like, well, you know, how much? I said, well, I'm not going to say. what was being touted would have got me. And so I think it was, he said that I was the only player he wanted to sign that summer. He had a problem with Kanchelskis, and just said, you know, Kurt, do you want to come up and have a look? I said, yeah, sure, I'll come up. But, you know, the next day I was at, you know, Sir Alan Sugar's house, and basically, you know, he threw everything at me, wouldn't let me leave the house without signing. So, but the reality was, I was very happy where I was, and I played the best, you know, football of my career. I was doing great with England. I honestly thought the United thing would probably come back and happen again. Unfortunately, you know, the injuries and that sort of thing then started from that season onwards, which which was, of course, very disappointing. But, you know, at that point, I felt that I was so confident within my own ability and I was getting better and better as a player that, I was loyal. I was very happy at Spurs. And they just got rid of what would have been Hughes, Kantelskis, and him. So that was probably what the decision was based on.
Yeah. Dan, can I ask you, Dan, I'm curious, because the way you talk about your career and your loyalty to Tottenham and lack of silverware in many ways at Tottenham.
Yeah.
And for sure. You stayed there. And there's no doubt, had you joined Manchester United, your trophy cabinet would probably be a lot fuller. And I think of Alan Shearer and the decision he made at Newcastle when he didn't go to United, a club where he would have won multiple trophies, but stayed at the club he loved. Now, Alan will probably tell you he was happy with that decision. Are you happy with that? Do you think you fulfilled everything you could as a player? Forget the injuries. I know as somebody who was injured a lot.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think first and foremost, I think that I would like to have gone elsewhere just because the treatment I got at Spurs is pretty bad. And I think I would have got a lot of that situation itself would have been 10 times better, which of course I would love more than anything in the world. But yes, obviously I'm still good mates with Ted and things like that and a few of the boys. So when you talk about it, of course I would love to be, walk around a golf course now and I won the Premier League 3 or 4 times, Champions League and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, who wouldn't? And to have played in that team. You know, the great players that that team had, with Keane and Scholes, Bex, all the boys, Giggs. I mean, what a team. And to, of course, to have played for Sir Alex. I would love to have done that, sat here now. Who would? When I look back at it, I just look back and I think, with the situation as it was and what was thrown at me at that point, I believe it was the right thing to do. Would I much prefer, have a nice big, much bigger trophy room in the house with everything else and play at Old Trafford and playing the Champions League finals and all those massive, massive games. I would love that, of course. There's no doubt about it.
I mean,
you only think about it every other day, Darren.
Here's a curveball, Darren. Here's a curveball. And it's come from what you just said then about treatment at Tottenham. And I don't know if you meant medical treatment or whether you meant treatment from the terraces. I was watching the Britney Spears documentary today, which, if you haven't, you should. Yeah. And I know you both scratching your heads.
We did watch it the other
night,
actually.
Did you?
Yeah.
I mean, just what that poor girl's been through, it's very difficult to describe.
Imagine.
But I'm wondering about you at that same time. When you picked up the moniker sick note and you were trying your very best to get back and play football, how damaging was that period to your mental health?
Wasn't easy. I'll tell you that. It was really tough. I think the fact is that people don't look at you as people, I suppose. You see you as footballers. They see at that point now people are Premier League starting to pay some real money and, we were earning good money. So that's all they see.
Mm-hmm.
So then, then they just, the fans at Tottenham were always so good to me. And that's, amazing. And one of the reasons, probably another reason why I did stay that year that, it did come. Because when I first went to Spurs, I was pretty useless. But I remember you guys commentating on it. And I was getting taken off week after week.
Not me,
Dan. And I remember going, oh, my God.
Not me.
Not me, Dan.
I literally got taken off in like 6 games on the bounce. And then, luckily the physio realised that I'd had a hernia operation, came back, and before you know it, I think I was in Andy's team of the year. How about that?
There you go. Of course you will.
But the fans were so good to me. The press hammered me, but the fans were great to me. So it's always been that way. So in terms of answering your question, it was, actually the medical treatment that I received wasn't great. And, there was a lot of few misdiagnoses and, I mean, one instance, I went for a scan knowing that I had pretty much torn my groin. And when I came back to the treatment area, the next day, they said, oh, no, it's fine. And they kept struggling with it a week or two. And then I went and saw the England physio and he said, well, you need to go and see the scan because that's an old tear in there. And I did. And of course, the scan had disappeared and
the assistant physio told me, he said, oh yeah, no, I think it was definitely torn. So, I mean, you imagine how my family and friends were and all that. And I was also, I was talking to Cloud, just got on with it. And I said, well, this obviously better never happen again. And speak to the chairman. And so, and he was like, oh, no, it doesn't, the specialists tell you what to do, not the physios. I went, no, the physio does what the rehab. And the rehab is based on what the specialist says the injury is. And if they lied, then it's pretty scandalous. So that is, really disappointing. And people obviously didn't know that. And I think, when I retired, I decided to, let people know that. I think my dad, things like that, were always like, you need to let people know exactly what you went through because it's completely out of order.
So are you, I don't want to get you into trouble here. If this is something you've discussed previously, that's fine. But actually, they were covering up injuries that you were carrying in order to get you back on a football pitch. Simple as that.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that sometimes I took that in a good way in terms of, I'm really important to the team and that's great. The reality is I just love playing football and I needed someone to say, hey, Darren, you're not right. Because I would go out and play and I ended up doing that. I ended up playing with like torn, Achilles and my groin. I mean, Christian Gross, I played in a game with a torn groin when I played with my left foot. I mean, it was ridiculous. And how anyone could get away with that is madness.
Well, it's funny. We were discussing it, Darren, before you joined us, Andy's problems and, a generation that would take to a football pitch most weekends couldn't without an injection. But just on the mental health, how bad was it that, never mind physically you couldn't do it, but that mentally you were under real duress?
Yeah, no, I definitely struggled with it without probably knowing it. I think that I just wanted to play. But the reality was every time I'd pick up an injury, I'd then, go in the shop and they'd be on the back page, sick note this, sick note that. And I was just like, God almighty, really? And so I'd end up playing with injuries even more. And of course, what does that do? It makes it 10 times worse. And I think that's the biggest thing. And like you say, the team wanted me out there playing. Jerry wanted me playing. Christian Gross, whoever, they wanted me playing because the squads aren't what they are now.
No.
As a manager, to be fair to Jerry was always really good to me and just like, you sure. I mean, I'd have the chairman, Alan Sugar, phoning me up saying, do you mind going on the bench tomorrow after we lost three games? It'll give the crowd a lift. And I said yes. And I was like, and we were 3-0 up at half time, so it's like, he came into the changing room at half time, and he's like, with a big smile on his face, he worked, didn't it? And then, with 10 minutes to go, we're only 3-2 up, and they throw me on. I'm like, oh my God.
I'm going to leave our last question, unreal. Darren, to Andy. We're both puzzled. It means more to him than it does me. Andy, it's all yours.
Yeah, I'm literally, I was reading that and it took me by surprise. I was unaware of regarding you as a youngster. I think when you were about 16, correct me when I'm wrong, but because your dad, you were eligible to play for Scotland, yes?
Yes, I was. Yep.
Right. And you went to Scotland for some trials. Now, did you turn my country down? or, as I read, did they say to you, sorry, son, not for us?
I definitely the latter. it was actually Andy Roxburgh. I think I was playing in the Portsmouth youth team and a couple of our boys were playing for the England youth team and all that. And I think, I don't know how it came about, but I remember Grant Paddo was like, Darren, I think that I've had an inquiry for your, they want you to come up and have a trial at Scotland because you're your dad and all that. And obviously my dad had done so much for me growing up as a kid and all that. And I was I was buzzing. I was like, I'll go up there. Why not? At that point, I don't know if I'm going to be a professional footballer. Of course, yeah. So I went up there and it was, I don't think I played very well. I think I played right back in a trial game or something. And I remember Andy Roxburgh being there and I guess it worked out okay.
It worked out very well, if you don't mind my saying that.
I don't think it's a decision that you regretted hearing, no.
I did say last question, I lied. I'm going to phrase it carefully, and you can phrase your answer just as carefully. Do you think at some point in the future, Jurgen Klinsmann will manage Tottenham Hotspur?
I would like to see that, for sure. I think that would be great. Hopefully not for a while. Let's hope that Jose can get things going. And we might win a couple of trophies. How about that? I'd love to see Jurgen back in the Prem, and obviously it's good.
So would we. Darren, it's been brilliant. Thank you so much.
Lovely.
If you're dining today, make sure it's early. Don't leave it until too late. You know that better than us, mind you.
Yes. Yeah.
Exactly. Don't worry, I do.
Enjoy, Darren.
For 5 days.
Great talk. Darren. Thanks, mate. That was really good fun. Brilliant. And the prospect of Klinsmann returning to Tottenham, Andy, has he gone? Let me just check with Luis. He's gone now, hasn't he? Yeah, he's gone, yeah. So he can't hear me.
No, he can't hear you. Good, excellent. Well, that's good. Well, I think he was being very diplomatic, Daz, with his answer.
So do I. I get the feeling that if harm were to come to Mourinho, I know who might be in the frame. That's for sure.
Wait, by harm, do you mean if they were to get spanked in the final and if they were to miss out in the top four,
yes,
would that be harmful enough?
Yes. Although, if I'm Jurgen Klinsmann, I don't want to see him selling Harry Kane. If I'm Harry Kane, does that keep me at Tottenham? Maybe not.
Yeah, well.
Maybe not.
Maybe not.
I reiterate what I said during that conversation. Certainly wasn't me that was battering him during our time at Sky. That could only have been Tyler.
No, not me. As he said, he was in my team of the year. So, I was battering him. It must have been Mark Tyler, obviously. That's the thing.
What does the week hold for you? When do you undergo surgery?
I've got to go down for pre-op test to London on Monday, and then my surgery is scheduled for the 27th, Saturday morning.
So we will speak next week?
Yes, we will speak on Friday, yeah, definitely.
Okay, all right. To the rest of the world, thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. Yes. If you do that, you'll pick us up from automatically any podcast site that you tend to subscribe to yourself. If you want to get in touch with us, you can on Twitter and Instagram at Keys and Grey Pod. Keys, A-N-D, Keys and Grey Pod. And as we say every week, tell your mates, we're unsponsored. We're looking to do as best we can. It's a bit of fun, and I hope you're enjoying it. I'll talk to you next week, Andy.
All right, fella. Talk soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. acast.com.